Right. Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. Why don't you come on in, grab your seat. It's really good to see you this morning. Especially good to see if you're visiting with us, and especially if you are a new CSU student, just as Travis mentioned. Those of you that are just beginning your college career, I want you to understand that this is such a critically important time in your life. And you may not realize it, but you are making decisions that are going to shape your life. Maybe shape your life in a really significant way. And it doesn't seem like it. I know this new phase of your life is just fresh and exciting and maybe a little scary, but you are making choices right now that are going to shape values that will shape your life. And you may be making decisions that are going to put you on a certain trajectory. And that trajectory, of course, can be adjusted over your lifetime, but you are making decisions that are setting a course that are going to be very important. And because of that, I am so glad that you joined us this morning. Because as you make those life-shaping decisions, I think it is so important that you include God in those and that you let him instruct you and let him shape those values and those decisions for you. And so we are really glad that you came. We're in the middle of a series here. We're going through the book of Mark in the Bible. And that's what we do here is we just typically just teach through the Bible. And try to understand what God is telling us through this book. We believe that these are the words of God right here in this book. And so we're going to read them and try to understand what he wants to tell us this morning. And so today we are in Mark chapter 12. And why don't you go ahead and open up your Bibles to Mark chapter 12. It's going to be on page 848 if you're using a house Bible. And we're going to read the same passage that John read for us last week. And we're just going to take a little bit of a different angle. Okay, Mark 12, 28 through 34. And one of the scribes came up and heard them disputing with one another. And seeing that he answered them well, asked him, "Which commandment is the most important of all?" Jesus answered, "The most important is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these." And the scribe said to him, "You are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one, and there is no other besides him. And to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding and with all the strength and to love one's neighbor as oneself is much more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." And when Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And after that, no one dared to ask him any more questions. Okay, so obviously this is a summary passage, and Jesus is summing up really the whole of the Bible and the whole of God's intention for our life, and he does that by giving two statements, two commandments here. The first one, to love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and the second, to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, last week, John went through that first commandment with us, and he just gave an excellent message about how our priority is loving God. And at the end of everything, at the end of our lives, what really matters is the love that we have for God. That's what matters. And so I really encourage you to listen to that message. And this message really is dependent on that first message. So we're going to tackle the second part of the great commandment today. That is to love your neighbor as yourself. We have that PowerPoint. Let me bring that up. All right, we'll keep going. Love your neighbor as yourself. So we have a simple command that we're trying to tackle this morning. Just five words, really. Love your neighbor as yourself. But obviously, it's a very, very comprehensive, very broad command. But it gives us a what? Love. We're supposed to love. It gives us a who, your neighbor, and it gives us a how much, as yourself. Well, we're going to look at each one of those, but we're going to start in the middle, and we're going to start with your neighbor. We are to love your neighbor, and we want to understand first actually who we are loving. Now, again, your neighbor is a very broad term, and that includes everybody. Okay, we are to love everybody. That was Jesus' intention, is to communicate that we are to love everybody. But for our purposes today, and for the sake of application, and for the sake of having something tangible to leave with this morning, we're going to focus, we're going to narrow a little bit, and we're going to take a look at a particular subset of neighbor. Okay? Now, we could look at it at several different subsets. We could look at our actual physical neighbors. Okay, the people that live next door to us, the people that we rub shoulders with on a daily basis, and we've done that quite a bit in this church in recent years. We've tried to take this command from Jesus, this comprehensive basic command, and say, well, we should at least be loving those people that are right next to us, that we do see on an almost daily basis. You know, as believers in Christ, we should be loving there. We should be loving the people right around us. And so that would be a very appropriate application to look at those people in our immediate vicinity, our actual physical neighbors. We have championed that in recent years, and we're going to continue to champion that. We believe that that is something that we should just do as Christians. And yet, this morning, that's not who we're going to look at. We could also look at sort of the opposite, and those people that are far from us culturally, that there may be cultural barriers in between us and them. That would be very appropriate as well. You know, this isn't the only place where this great commandment is summarized. It's also summarized in Luke chapter 10, right before Jesus tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. I want to read the first few verses of that passage. It says, "And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' Jesus said to him, 'What is written in the law? How do you read it?' And he answered, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.'" Okay, so this man comes to Jesus and he asks him a question, and Jesus asks him to summarize the law, and he does it rightly, just as Jesus would. And he said, "Love God with everything that you have and love your neighbor as yourself." But this man also wanted to justify himself a little bit more. And so he asked Jesus after that, he says, "Well, who is my neighbor? Can you help me, Jesus, understand who my neighbor is?" And so then Jesus tells him the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's a very famous parable. But what happens is there is this man, this Samaritan, who was an outsider. He was a foreigner. He was even a rival, or could be considered an enemy in that Jewish culture. But he, in this parable, is the hero of the story. And this Samaritan loves in an incredible, radical way those that he culturally should not have. And so as Jesus defines neighbor using that parable, we could say, well, maybe we should talk about loving those people who we naturally shouldn't, who would be rivals in the eyes of the world. That would be a very appropriate application of this as well. I think that would be a fun message to tackle, talking about how we love even those that are far from us. But that's not who we're going to talk about this morning either. This morning, I would like to talk about our love for those in this room, our love in this church family. And to ask ourselves, okay, are we loving as Jesus would have us love right here? Now, that may seem a little exclusive or maybe too inward focused, but I think it is really important, and it's actually a biblical priority. And I think it's a biblical priority for a reason. You know, last week, John shared with us how our goal in life is to love God with all of our heart, all of our soul, all our mind, all of our strength. And the greatest gift that we can give people is that love, and to lead them to love God in the same way. But I think so often the vehicle through which that comes is the love that we have right here. And so often if we are going to love those outside these walls. If we're going to love our immediate neighbors, if we're going to love those at a distance, love people that are a distance from us, we must have a love here. We must have a love here. It's sort of like when you get on an airplane and they tell you, put your oxygen mask on first before you help with your child. And the airlines tell you that because they know if you are incapacitated, if you're not healthy, if you don't have it together, you're not going to be able to help others. You're not going to be able to love as you should. In the same way, if there is not a healthy love right here, right in this room, then I don't think we're going to be able to love outside of these walls. Because our love is a powerful thing. It's a powerfully persuasive thing. And it persuades one way or the other. And some people are compelled towards God because they see love among those who claim to follow God. And others are repulsed because they see a lack of love. And so I think it is very appropriate to first, as we're talking about loving our neighbor, loving other people, to first make sure that there is a healthy love here and to ask ourselves some serious questions about the state of our love here. Now, if you are new with us, you might think, well, I don't even belong to this church family right now. Is this really applicable to me? I think it is very much. And I think as you make decisions about whether or not you want to be a part of a church family or really just who you want your relational circle to be in general, I think this is an important message to consider. As we consider together the value of love among those who are seeking Jesus Christ together. Okay, so we're going to focus on loving each other here. And you know, this has been a little bit of a challenging message for me to prepare. I think partly because I'm just dealing with five words today. And sometimes when you only have five words, you have 1,000 different paths you could go down and you feel paralyzed because there are too many options. But I also have been challenged by this message because I think there is such a need. There's such a need to address this topic. And my hope is that this message can be a challenge to us. It can be a challenging message to each one of us as we consider the love that we have for each other here, and even whether or not we are in position to love well. Okay, so we are loving our neighbors, but specifically today we're talking about loving each other right here. And so that's the who, the your neighbor. Well, let's look at the last part of that verse, those five words, the as yourself. Okay, we're loving each other, but there's a degree to which we love each other. And here Jesus says, love as yourself. And that's interesting. That's a pretty high bar. That's a high standard. That's our target, though, for the love that we are to give to others, as yourself. You know, Paul actually uses this reference point in Ephesians chapter 5 when he is talking about marriage, and he is given instruction on how a husband should love his wife. This is what he says. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. And so that's the reference point that Paul gives in that case also, ourselves. Because the reality is, every one of us, we wake up in the morning and we care about ourselves. Okay, we do try to nourish and cherish our own bodies. We are concerned about how we're going to feed ourselves. We are concerned about the things going on in our lives, the purposes that we're trying to fulfill. And that's not just a selfish thing, that's a human thing. We naturally are going to take care of ourselves. So Jesus and Paul are saying, okay, in that same way, apply that attention that you give to yourself to other people. And that's the bar, that's the standard. And that's a pretty high bar. It's a pretty high bar to pay attention to others like we pay attention to ourselves. So that's the how much, but Now, let's look at the actual command to love and try to understand that. We're trying to love each other. We're trying to love each other as ourselves. But what does it really mean to love, and what is needed in order to love each other well? Well, love is a notoriously difficult word to define. And if you look in the dictionary, there are typically a dozen different definitions of love. So it can be difficult to define. I'm not going to define it exhaustively, but I do want to share a few verses that hopefully fill in a little bit of what it means to love, especially in our context today. Now, the first verse is 1 John 4:19. And what it says there is that we love because he first loved us. And that's important to know when we're talking about love, that love has a source and that we cannot just conjure up love from within ourselves. We love because he first loved us. Because Jesus Christ poured out love for us, we are able to love. Otherwise, we would not be. So we love because he first loved us. And that is critical to know, to remember that our love has a source. It's not something that originates within ourselves. But we have a few other verses that give us a little bit of a definition of love, or tell us a little bit more about what love actually is. 1 John 3:16 says this, "By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers." That's how we know what love is. We look at Jesus, and specifically we look at his willingness to sacrifice and to lay down his life for us. We see that, and we see love. Another verse is John 15:13, the words of Jesus himself. And he says, "Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends." So in love, there is this self-sacrifice. There is this laying down of life. That seems to be much of the biblical definition, is that I'm willing to give myself up for other people. And our reference point is Jesus. So we look to Jesus, we see his sacrifice, and we say we want to imitate that and love in that way. So love is very self-sacrificial. However, there's another point that I want to draw out of the verse that I just read. In John 15:13. Again, what it says is that greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. And the "for his friends" is much of what I want to dwell on this morning. He lay down his life for his friends, because the implication that I see there is that to love genuinely, as God asks us to love here, is that it does require some sort of a relational context, perhaps even friendship. Like, there's a closeness that we need to have with others in order to love them well. Can we lay down our lives for our friends? I think there is another verse that causes that to hit home, and that's Hebrews 10:24 through 25. Why don't you go ahead and open up to that verse real quick. Flip to it. And it's going to be on page 1007. Okay, Hebrews 10:24 and 25. It says, "And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." I'm going to read that one more time. "And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." There are two things that I want to draw out of that verse. The first one is the "not neglecting to meet together" part. Okay, there's this encouragement to love here, and even to stir one another up towards love. But again, we see a context here. And the implication is that there is a need for togetherness. That if we are going to love, if we are going to stir one another up towards love, there is a meeting together. And the command is not to neglect that. That we must be in that kind of relational context. I must know somebody's needs to some extent. Okay, I must be in their space. I must be close to them. There must be a togetherness if there is going to be a stirring of love, if we're going to be able to obey this greatest of commandments, to love each other. And so there is that context, but the second thing that I want to draw out of that verse is the, as is the habit of some. So it is the habit of some, and I would say the habit of many, to neglect meeting together. It's just very common. And it is a temptation for all of us to fall into, that we are tempted to neglect togetherness. We are tempted to neglect friendship. In all of us, if we have grown up in the culture that we are living in, we have a fierce kind of independency. We have a fierce individualism. And we tend to think that we're pretty okay by ourselves, and that we don't necessarily need people in our lives that much. And we are all tempted to neglect each other and to neglect just being with each other. And life pushes us around and back and forth, and a lot of times we arrive at this place where we just lack relationship. We lack the relational context we need in order to love each other well. And I could address even a few specific groups here. You know, I mentioned earlier our students that might just be coming to school and starting your college career. I want to throw out a plea to you. You know, some of you, you may be looking around at different churches. Maybe you grew up in a church and you're trying to decide what your spiritual walk is going to look like in your college career. Well, I want to plead with you not to fall into this trap of believing that you will be fine with God while keeping others at a distance. It is so easy to fall into that trap. It is so easy to assume that, yeah, I'm doing pretty well, and I can have a strong and vibrant relationship with God while having a casual, distant relationships with those that are trying to follow him as well. It just happens all the time. All of us will be tempted at some point in our life to distance ourselves from other believers. Sometimes it's just the craziness of life that causes us to do that. It's different life circumstances. Sometimes it's difficult relational circumstances, but we will all be tempted to isolate ourselves at least a little bit. And yet I think throughout the Bible, we are warned not to do that, that we need each other so much. We could also talk about people that are perhaps more around my age or my season of life. Maybe you have a handful of kids in your home, and you have school commitments, and there's soccer, and there's piano, and there's lots going on, and there's also the temptation to distance yourself a little bit from other people. And yet we must not. And we must maintain this priority. We must realize that the first and second parts of the Great Commandment cannot be separated. They just cannot. I want to read 1 John 4:20-21. It says this: if anyone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he does not love his brother whom he has seen, cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him: whoever loves God must also love his brother. And the point that John is making here in a very powerful way is that these things just cannot be separated. My love for God and my love for those in this room, they go together. They're just intertwined. They cannot be pulled apart. If I am going to love God, I must be in the context of loving others. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that God is love. That's what it says in 1 John 4:8. God, in his foundational nature, is loving relationship. We believe in God as a Trinity, that God is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And that although he is one, there are three persons, and there is loving relationship within God himself. And so those that are born of God, those that have been attached to God, united with him, his nature flows through us, and we must love relationally in the same way. So we are to love as God loves within himself. And we must refuse to give into that temptation to neglect being together. You know, this past week on our blog, we have posted a series of articles from contributors in this room about friendship. We've called it Friendship Week. And we've tried to highlight the need for friendship, that friendship is so critical in our lives because, again, it is that relational context through which love happens. And yet, it is so easy to find yourself sort of friendless, isolated, not close to people. And we have sensed that that could be a real issue here. And really, it's an issue everywhere. I think in our world today, it is so easy to get stretched and to get pulled in so many different directions that after a while you just find yourself in a place where you don't feel like you have close friends. You just feel isolated. And I have heard from many in this room that they feel something like that, that there is this isolation that is very real in their lives. It can even be real in my life. And yet if that's really happening, then we must address that. And we must strive together to make sure that we really do have contexts where we can be together and that there can be true friendships that are Christ-centered and that draw us to Jesus. And so much of the point that I am making today is this, that friendship and togetherness provide a critical context for loving each other. And that loving of each other is inseparable from our love for God. We need to be together. Now, this message intentionally coincided with our small group fair. And right after the service today, we're having a small group fair. So back in the gym, there are all kinds of tables set up, and small groups are on display. Now, small groups are not the only way to find the kind of relational context that I am talking about, but they are a way, and they are a way that we tried to really develop and champion in our church. And so, this morning, I wanted to talk for a few minutes about small groups. And I wanted to talk about small groups first by telling you a little bit about my own small group. I had a couple pictures here, but I won't show them to you, but they're over there. So you can look at them. I want to tell you about my small group. So I'm on a small group, and our small group is really centered around international students. And so we have this mix of Americans and international students on our small group. It's really a couple different internationally centered small groups, and we meet separately from week to week, but we come together a lot, and so really there are two small groups functioning as one. But there's this mix of Americans and people from really all different countries, all different ethnicities, and all different age groups. And we have people that are students, undergraduate students, and grad students. And we have single people and married people and families and teen families and empty nesters. And we just have this broad range of people on our small group. And it is this amazing little community of people. But I want to tell you something. I want to tell you first why I can be tempted to distance myself from these people. Why I can be tempted to leave this small group. Let me give you a few reasons for that. Number one, there's consistent turnover consistent turnover, and it takes time, takes a long time to develop new friendships. So in our small group specifically, we have a lot of students coming in and coming out. And they'll come into our community, and we'll develop these friendships, and while they're going to school, and they may come to a faith, and that faith will be developed, and we can get very close. And then, of course, there's graduation, and there's leaving. And I've been on this particular small group for the past 13 years. We've seen a lot of coming and going. And that wears on you after a while. Perhaps many of you can relate to that. If you've been on a small group and you've seen turnover and constant new faces or old faces leaving and new faces coming, and you know that it is so hard, especially at certain stages of life, to develop those new friendships, and it takes a long time, and you're just not quite sure that you want to put in the effort. I can definitely relate to that. Another reason that I am tempted to distance myself from this small group is that it's exhausting. It's exhausting to be part of a small group. It's exhausting to be in a close community with other people. It's especially exhausting when you have a bunch of kids on a small group. And when you're trying to manage those kids during those times that you're meeting together. And so often, after our small group ends, if it's at our house, my wife and I will just collapse on the couch, just exhausted, and just stare at the wall. Because it's so wearying. So it's exhausting. Thirdly, another reason I'm tempted to leave this small group is that sin happens. Sin and disagreement happens. And when you get a bunch of people together, a bunch of sinners together, sin rears up. And it rears up in me. And when you get a bunch of people together and you're trying to go a certain direction, people are going to have different thoughts on where and how to go. And it's hard to work through all those things. And sometimes it feels like, you know, I'd just rather not deal with people and their sin. And all these different opinions. So that's another reason. And then fourthly, I am tempted to distance myself from the small group because sometimes our efforts just seem fruitless. Like nothing's really happening. Sometimes we're going backwards, it feels like. And there have been times over the years where I felt like, okay, we're just dwindling, and it doesn't seem like anything's happening in people's lives, and I'm not sure if it's really even worth it to carry on here. And so those are all feelings that I can have about my small group. And if you have been on a small group, you have felt the same things, I am sure. And they push on you, and they can convince you that this just isn't really worth it to be with these people. But I also want to share with you why I want and need these people, this small group. Yes, there is consistent turnover, but also I have dear friendships on this small group, that only exist because we have spent regular time together for years. Sometimes it took years. But that consistent time together, where we did not neglect meeting together, produced a friendship over time that is incredibly precious to me. And not only that, although there has been a lot of turnover, I know that there are people all around the world that have been marked by Jesus and this little community. And yes, it's hard to see them go each time. But I'm glad that for the sake of insulating myself from pain, I did not remove myself from their lives. Instead, we all tried to create a community that transformed them. And they're in different places and living out that life for Jesus. Secondly, yes, it is exhausting, but there is contentment on the other side of that hard work. And although my wife and I collapse on the couch some days after small group, a lot of times it's a happy exhaustion. And we can sit there and think, you know, we really love these people. These are amazing people that we get to hang out with. And it's hard, and it's wearisome to do this week after week, but there's a contentment here. And even when I consider the managing of kids during small group, I know that my kids are being imprinted with a value of togetherness that I think is going to be very important for their lives. And as they grow up, they are going to see a priority here of being together. Thirdly, yes, sin happens, but sin is going to happen regardless, whether I'm with these people or not. But in the context of that community and those relationships, sin is addressed and overcome. Sin is addressed and overcome in the context of committed relationship. And besides, different perspectives have this refining effect in my life, and they produce something in me that is very, very valuable. And then fourthly, although it seems fruitless at times, God has promised a harvest if we do not give up. And I can see over the past 13 years that although there have been times in the valley where it just seemed like nothing was happening, over time, the trend is upward. And there is a fruit that is being produced. And I can't just abandon things when we're in one of those valleys. Yes, it goes up and down, but over time, it gets higher and higher. And so I am so thankful for these people that are in my life. Now, if you're not on a small group, this is not meant to shame you. Okay, Jesus does not require you to be on a small group. Okay, and there could be good reasons not to be on one, actually. However, although it is not required that we are on a small group, it is required that we love one another. And so we have to just ask ourselves, are we in a place where we are able to love one another and we are able to be loved? And so there are certain questions that I think we need to answer yes to. Okay, we may not need to be on a small group, but we have to answer certain questions yes. I want to read a few. One of those questions is, do you have people in your life that know the inner workings of your heart well? Do you have those people in your life where you can identify specific people by name and say, yeah, they know me and I know them? Okay, do you have those people in your life? Secondly, do you have people in your life who regularly pray for you and pray for specifics in your life and you for them? Okay, do you have those people in your life? Thirdly, do you have people that would care for you in tangible ways in the middle of trial? You know, if something happened to you, if some tragedy, some illness, or just some need happened, would there be people that surrounded you and helped? You know, I know the video isn't working right now. We had a video this morning of a dear couple in our church, Clarence. Oh, it's going? All right, let's do it. Okay, we're going to go ahead and play this video. And this is an example, I think, of care that is given in the context of community. So let's roll that.
My name is Clarence Elbert. I'm a member of the church. I joined about a year ago. And after we joined the church, we wanted to meet more people, so we joined a small group. About a month ago, my wife had a serious medical condition, and I took her to the hospital, and she was admitted to the emergency room. Then they put her in ICU. While she was in ICU, her condition continued to deteriorate, and it was very bad. I thought for a while that I might lose her. The day after she was admitted to ICU, I called my small group's leader and told him about Thelma being in ICU, and he took it from there. He notified the pastors at the church, and he sent out emails to all the members of our small group. And I can't stress enough how much comfort that I got for my small group.
My husband was very worried while I was in the hospital, and he had a lot of comfort from having two of the men come to the hospital to take him down to the cafeteria and get him away from me and all the nurses and doctors for a while, to give him a break and help him to just feel more relaxed. And then they would pray with him and help him to stay calm that way.
Soon as she was allowed to have visitors, they were there with me every day. They came in and ate lunch with me. They came in to visit Thelma. And every day, I knew that they were praying for Thelma.
Then after I was discharged and came home, two of the ladies in our group brought food over to us so that I didn't have to be concerned about cooking meals for the first couple of days after I got home. I think that's just a very important part of life, to be able to have friends like that. Yeah. We also have fun times together where we go out to have picnics and just whatever we feel like would be fun to do. So it's not all just church related, but it's social life also with all these nice people in the group. And you get to know each other real good, faster than you would if you just sat in church for an hour next to this person and don't really get an opportunity to talk to them very much.
The reason that we're sharing this story today is that we want to encourage members of the church to join a small group. Let them be part of your extended family. I wouldn't have made it without them, and I'm encouraging every one of you. Please go join a small group.
All right, well, I think that's just a sweet story there from Clarence and Thelma. They had a group of people that could come around them in their time of need. And I think that's an important question, again, for us to ask ourselves is would we have that kind of community to come around us in our time of need? One final question to ask ourselves: do we have a community of people, not only that can help us in our time of need, but a community of people that we can invite others into? Okay, I think that's really important. As I said at the beginning, so much of the vehicle of God's love comes through our love as those who are following him. And typically when somebody comes to Christ and is transformed by him and grows in him, it is in the context of loving relationship, of community. And so do you have a group of people that you can invite somebody into and have that love displayed? That's another important question to answer, yes. So, today is our small group fair. And as I said, it is not a Christian requirement to be on a small group. Okay, that's not something necessary for salvation. And if you can answer some of those questions, yes, without being on a small group, then that's fantastic. And I would encourage you to continue in that. But if some of those questions you struggle answering yes, if you feel some of that loneliness, if you struggle to say yes, there are people that know my life well, there are people that are praying for me and I for them, if you struggle to say yes, there is a group of people that would rally around me in my time of need, I do want to encourage you strongly to go back there and check out those small groups. Walk around there. Look to see if there is something that you could step into, some community that you could step into, because remember, loving each other is so critically important. It is part of the Christian life. It cannot be separated from our love for God. We need each other. We may not neglect meeting together. So I'd really encourage you to go back there and check out those small groups. But even as you do survey all of them and you still wonder, would I really fit in one of these, or does this really work for me? And you're questioning that, I want you to come see me. I'm going to be standing at a table in the center of the gym back there, and I'm going to have a little sign-up sheet. And this sign-up sheet is basically going to be for those who would love help in finding a place, finding a relational community, finding friendship. You know, this is one of our highest priorities as pastors this fall. As we've looked around the church and tried to recognize different needs in our church, we have come to the conclusion that we need to make it a very high priority to help people find that close connection with others, to find just basic friendship. And we want to help you with that. And so what I would love for you to do is come to that table in the center and just write down your name and some contact info. And we want to help you find a place. And it may not even be an existing small group. It may not be a small group at all. But we want to find somewhere where you can thrive, where you can be loved, and where you can love others. I think we're going to sing one more song before we close. But this is so, so vitally important. Last week, John shared how we must love each other, or love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. But the second part of that commandment cannot be separated from the first. We must love our neighbor, and specifically, we must love each other. And if you feel like you're in a place where you are not receiving or giving that love, please come back and see me in the gym.
All right, everybody, take a stand. I was going to say, have a seat. Take a stand now. Have a stand, everyone. We're all going to be, We're all going to be standing awkwardly back at tables back there in the back, hoping you talk to us. And so I'm just, like, trying to get the awkwardness flowing now. All right. Hey, we all get to worship together in heaven forever. That's what the song is about.